2 years ago, I was asked by the mission president of Mongolia to go to Mongolia. So we went. And by the way, these are volunteer exertions. I don't get paid. My fare is paid by myself, which I always feel very bitter about, but I get over it. So anything I do, I pay for my own way, because I don't expect a very poor mission field to pay out money. I just don't think that's what we're here for. So Paul Katanka, who knew me, said, can you come over and teach some diabetes educator? Because I'm a dietitian and a diabetes educator. I have a doctorate in public health, so I know a little bit about health. And I said, yes, Paul. And then he said, well, we'd like you to bring some money over with you so you can buy machines. I knew there'd be a catch. So I raised about $15,000, which was quite remarkable. So about 9 months ago, he contacted me again and said, can you come over this year? And I said, well, I really don't have time. He said, this is my last year here. I said, well, I better find time. I said, the only time I can come is the end of July, beginning of August for 1 week, and I'll come on my own. Because I can't afford my wife to have holidays. She's got to learn to work. She worked. No, she couldn't come. And so he said, of course, can you bring some more money over? Which I thought was very, asking a lot. So I said, sure. And I thought, I wonder how I'll do. So I put the advertising around him. We raised $14,000, and I want to thank you for your contribution, because some of you contributed, and I got a check from you. That $14,000 translated into 20 million tugras, because our dollar was at that stage extremely strong. And it still is strong, actually. Now, 20 million tugras is a lot of money for them. Now, I learned a lot from my first trip, because in the first trip I got there, we went from Beijing to Ulaanbaatar on the Siberian Express. Never do that. Always good to do it once, but never do it twice. We went first class, which meant you slept on a wooden bench and got no food or water. They brought a jug of hot water and then charged you 10 Chinese money. Yuan, I can't remember. And I wondered what it was for, but I think it was on the border, and if I wouldn't pay it, they wouldn't let me through, so I had to pay that. Wasn't done with a lot of love either. I didn't tell them that. And when I got off at the station, I'm very naive, not so much now. I was pickpocketed with about $2,000. That's a lot of money. Now, the amazing thing is that happens to everyone, but I felt my pocket being touched, so I became very unchristian, and I grabbed the guy by the collar. I absolutely grabbed him. There were two of them. Well dressed. These are not poor people who do this. And yet I knew immediately it wasn't him, it was the other guy. So I screamed and the other guy threw it on the ground. So I got it back. They reckon I'm the only person that ever got it back. And someone rudely said, I never knew you could move that fast. It's not fun to lose your wallet because you have your credit card, you have everything. We got it back. It was mission money too, which made it a bit awkward. So this time I was very careful. I flew in by plane and I put the money under my shirt in a bag. You know, no one touched my money. And I gave them the money and we were able to buy about 90 blood glucose monitors with a year's supply of strips. These glucose monitors are not given to anyone. They're given to, we go to hospitals and give them to patients that the doctors have chosen to have them. Because these people are so poor, they can't afford that stuff. On top of that, a friend of mine said to me, I want you to buy some food for some of the members, because the people there are very, very poor. We think that we're poor, we're wealthy. And I don't know how they live. Some only live on a dollar or two a day. I just don't know how they do it. Their diet is very poor. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I'm going to show you some slides and I'll explain as we go. That's Ulaanbaatar, the capital. The population of Mongolia is about 3 million. I think we have about 21 churches there. And I think there are about 10 or 11 in this capital city. We have about 1,700 members. When you think just over 10 years ago we had zero members, that's really interesting. They grow about 10% a year, which is very good, and mainly young people. And mainly very educated. There are some very common, you know, poor people there who are church members. A lot of them are very educated, and I'll show you that. So we're sitting on the top of the hill, of course, that's Buddhist. It's a communist government, but it's kind of, what do you call it, democratic. They got mad at them a couple of years ago and burnt down their headquarters. And that's what most people live in. That's a ger, a tent. They're interesting things to live in because there's no running water and there's no toilet. You have to go outside it's a hole in the ground and air conditioned because there's holes all around the building. But they're used to that. They live in one room, one family, one Adventist family had 8 children in one room. Well, no beds. They sleep on the floor. I think they had one bed. So that's Ulaanbaatar. There's a river that runs through the middle of it. That's it there. And, most people live in, even in this city, over there there's a Gur country, we have Gur churches. Most people can't afford to do that. Of course, some people are very wealthy. Now, I went to various hospitals. I went to 3 hospitals, including a children's hospital, and also I went to the university hospital where I spoke to the medical students. And these are some of the, patients that came to listen to the talk, and they were very anxious to get, and these aren't church members, they were very anxious to get their machine. Now, their names were read out, only those whose names were called out by the doctor got them. As I get older, my memory's not so good, and I just forgot what I was going to say. There was something I was going to say there. Yes. They did not get their year's supply of strips at once. Every 2 months, they have to go to the church and pick them up. Very clever way to do it. You keep in contact with them. And there's another lot. Some of these people there was a church meeting, and they all came to the church, quite a lot of them, to hear a meeting. That lady there is an Adventist, she's a dermatologist. That's why I say we have some very educated people there. See that lady there? She's a minister of our church. She works in the country. She's an educated woman and very bright, very clever. But she amazed me. She came down from the country to listen. She obviously never heard me before, otherwise she wouldn't have bothered. No, that's not quite true. That was the president at the time. He's now come back and he'll work in Victoria somewhere. All the rest of them, and there's the, oops. That lady down the front is an Adventist dietitian. She works for the conference. And you know how much she gets paid a week? How many dollars? Yeah, the ministers are lucky. A young minister gets 80, and me being a very old fella, I'd get $100. That's pretty good, isn't it? And there was another lady there, oh yes, see that one there with the baby? She's a minister's wife. Very poor people. So this lady said to me, can I have a machine so that when I go back to my churches, I can go around the community and test, so I can get into the houses? I said, of course. She wanted to use it to get into people's homes. PUC, Philippine Union College. Oh, she would have been back about 2 or 3 years. She's 28. Is that the one? She had a non-Christian boyfriend. She gave him up. So I felt really sorry for these people. So I actually gave her a week's wages out of my own pocket. I gave her a week's wages and I gave her 2 weeks because they told me they had nothing. And I said to them, this is for you, not for anyone else. You buy yourself a dress or something that you wouldn't do normally. We wouldn't think anything about it. But they dressed quite well considering. I don't know how they do. She pays half her rent. Whoops. I'm getting excited, aren't I? She pays half her money in rent because she lives in town. She walks to work because she can't afford anything else. And one of my friends said to me, when you go over there, I want you to buy some food for them. So we went to the market. You have to be very careful when you go to the market because they will help themselves. And so you have to be careful. And just imagine that I had 1.3 million tugras on me, a lot of money, and my wallet was like that. So when I took the money out, they all looked at me, but I made sure they'd got nowhere near it. So we went there and we bought a lot of food, 40 parcels of food. We had 5 kilos of rice. They got some oil. They got some garlic. They got some tomatoes. They got some juice. They got some flour, potatoes, carrots, onions, you know, whole lot of stuff. And we filled up the truck twice. That's the lady, that's the minister, that's the minister's wife, and that's the driver. He's a church member too. Told him he needed to do a bit more exercise because he had a lot of muscle down there. These were the university students. Well, they weren't university students. They were what they call... And you do your, what do you, registrars. They were endocrinologists. So what could I teach them? They wanted to know what you did. They wanted to know about education. How do you educate your people? And I couldn't answer the question, but Peter could. I'm sure he could. They said, how do you get people to do what you tell them? I said, if I knew that, I'd be a millionaire. I said, you can't make people do what you tell them. You can only encourage them. And you have to be, you have to listen to them. You've got to listen. You've got to show you care, and you've got to be available when they need you. Then they might listen to you. Even this country, let me tell you, to get people to obey you when you're a doctor, when you're a dietitian, is very difficult. They don't want to do it. They're not going to do it. Most people don't want to do it because they can't be bothered. Too hard. They just love eating their ice cream. They just love eating all that cake. They love their soft drink, and they don't know. And you say, you really shouldn't be drinking so much. I had a guy who used to drink 6 litres of Coke a day. That wasn't diet Coke. That's horrendous. And he was heavier than he was tall, which I thought was very interesting. Now, this is another group. We did a test. We tested them. One lady came in. She'd never been tested before, and her blood glucose level was 54. What would you do if you had a patient like that, Peter? You'd put them straight in hospital, wouldn't you? But you do. But over there, they don't know, you know. They go unconscious, they don't know. So she got a machine alright. That's another group from one of the hospitals. This is a children's hospital. All these children are insulin dependent. They're all young children. There's only a few of them. They were very keen. They were lovely kids, you know why? They all wanted their picture taken with me. They knew a famous person when they saw him. Obviously, they've never heard of me before. And these are the apartments live in. Now, some people might know this person. That's Coral Camps. Used to be Coral Christian. They live over there. They live in this apartment. And he works as a volunteer and helps no end. And they have a very nice apartment. The most interesting thing there is there are no such thing as lifts. You walk all the way up to the fourth or fifth floor. The other interesting thing is all the hot water comes from one source. So if the heater down in town doesn't work, you have cold showers. So I had cold showers for a week. It was very exciting. The first day it was terrible. After the second day you got used to it. For a whole week. I don't think I deserved it, but they didn't seem to care. And I had to pay for my own accommodation. I felt like telling them I wasn't going to pay them, but I thought, no. But that's what they put up with. That's life. You just put up with it. We're so fortunate. We expect it. They don't expect it. They're just grateful that we've got water. Now, when it was all over, I said, I'm going to Shanghai and I want to go to our church in Shanghai. Now, we have underground churches there, which are not recognized by the government. And we have official churches there. This is an official church. It's the Moore Street Church in Shanghai. And I was told, I didn't know where it was, so I stayed in this hotel and it was within sight of the hotel. The old Methodist church, it's occupied by many denominations. We're very lucky because we keep the Sabbath. Guess what? We don't have any competition. You know, we worship there. So I went along and I was told it starts at 9, but get there a bit earlier. So I arrived about 20 past 8 and it was packed. Because they spent a whole hour praying on their knees. And it was, I don't know what they said, because it was language I couldn't understand. It was very innovative. Can you understand, Johnny? Peter? Depending on the dialect, can you speak any dialect? A little bit. I have no idea, but they stayed on their knees for a whole hour, and a large percentage of them were very young people, and I was very interested to see they all wore jeans, but probably that's because it was quite modern to wear jeans, you know. Very neat. And there were also a lot of old people. And the service was very traditional. It was like it was 1945. That's not a critical comment. It's really interesting to watch that. Because they're independent. You know what I mean by that? Officially, we can't have anything to do with them. But the government doesn't like that. It's very traditional. Their beliefs are very traditional. The choir at the back saying, I'm coming home. Very well done. And there we are. Over 2,000 people attended. In the middle of the city. And they couldn't fit in the church, so you went into side rooms and they had televisions where you watched the speaker. And I want to let you know that the speaker spoke for an hour and a half. So I'm going to start doing that myself. I just thought I'd let you know. So we should finish by about 1:30. no question. And they do that in Mongolia too. Once again, I didn't know what he was saying. He went for an hour and a half. But they all sat there No one walked out. We need to learn a few things, don't we? Go past 12 here, what do? You get told off. There's the church. See that? Across, that's the Moore Street Church. Right in the middle of Shanghai, right in the shopping centers, or big shopping center, right in the middle of big shopping centers. So it was a very interesting experience. I just thought you might be interested in that. You have any questions? You want to donate? No, no, I've already paid for it. I'll just get rid of this. Okay. I was listening to the ABC recently. That's not Triple J, it's 774, the very conservative station. I don't even know what's on the other, but I believe it's a little more modern. And the music is not music, noise, alright? And I was listening, and someone rang up. You know how they have talkbacks? I don't even know why they rang up, but they said something to this effect. Ever since Adam and Eve, to which the commentator said, you don't believe in that, do you? He said, what don't you believe in? You don't believe in Adam and Eve. And the guy said, well, we've got to start from somewhere. Where do you think we came from? He said, slime. Now, I have met slimy people in my lifetime, but I'm not quite sure they came from slime, because when they die, what do they turn back into? They don't turn back into slime. They turn back into dust. And about the same time, I was watching another, television, and they had pictures of the Kimberleys, the very rugged area of the Kimberleys. And the person talking said, 1,870 million years ago this was formed. And I thought, he must have been there to know that. That's amazing. I thought, that's just a number. It reminded me when I was 60 years ago it would have been, or not quite 60, but close to it, when I was, let's say it was 1957 or 58, so it's not quite, 55 years ago, we went down to the Sydney Museum in Sydney. Just a young fella, 12 years old, 13, I can't remember now. Would have been 12, 13. And we went to the museum and they had the Queensland lungfish there. Heard of that? And on the first floor it told us it was 3 million years old. And I was very impressed until I went to the fifth floor where it told me it was 5 million years old. And I thought, there's something wrong here. They obviously don't talk to each other. So what did I come to the conclusion? I thought, someone's guessing something and the other person's guessing something else, and anyone's guess is as good as the same. But when I look at Peter, I say, Peter, you look like you're 170. And someone else says to him, Peter, you look like you're 40. Same guess. Do you know what I'm trying to say? I won't ask you what I look like, just in case you say something very rude. This reminds me, in the Time magazine in the last month, there was a letter that I'm going to read to you from a reverend. And a reverend is very authoritative. I just want you to know that, because I'm very authoritative. This is from the Reverend Donald L. Middleton from Shelbyville, Illinois. There is no inherent conflict between faith and science. The proponents of creationism who oppose science and evolution are fundamentalist throwbacks and do not represent the views of enlightened faith. Gives you a lot of encouragement, doesn't it? Who was the greatest scientist that ever existed? God. Why is he the greatest scientist? But he performed science. There is not one thing that goes on that God can't explain absolutely perfectly and correctly. Am I right? How about science? Science changes all the time. What is truth 10 years ago was not necessarily truth today. Back in the 1980s, I took a class at Loma Linda when I was there, a biochemistry class on lipids. Now, lipids are a very fancy word for fat. We use words like that so you don't understand what we're talking about. Right? And in lipids, the greatest thing then was prostaglandins, which you'd all know about, don't you? You've heard of that, haven't you? I doubt it. Now it's phytonutrients, phytoestrogen. That's the latest one. There's always something new. And like every good student, we had to sit exams, and they were very difficult exams, and we had to learn about prostaglandins. So we all used to go to the last year's examination to see what type of questions they asked. And I looked at last year's examinations, and it asked you what prostaglandins A did and what prostaglandins C did and what prostaglandin E did and what prostaglandin C did. You follow me now? And I learnt it all. And I looked at the answers and the answers were wrong. Prostaglandin C didn't do that. It was prostaglandin D. So I went to the professor who was a godly Christian man and I said, Jim, I don't know what's going on here, but last year you marked these questions wrong. That's not what it does. He said, no. He said, Harold, yeah, that's what happened last year. That's what it did last year. We've learnt since then that it doesn't do that. This one does that. Do you follow what I mean? That just shows you that science is not always accurate. Well, they're very bright people. No, I hadn't sat the exam. I just wanted to make sure that I hadn't learned the wrong thing. And he assured me I hadn't, that what he said this year was correct. What he said last year was correct then, but wasn't correct this year. I don't want to confuse your brain, but you understand. That doesn't mean science is nonsense. It's got some good stuff. But if you think that scientists have all the answers, I've got news for you. Because when it comes to the age of stuff, a lot of it, I don't know where they get it from. But, you know, the first humans inhabited Australia, 80,000 years ago, well, obviously someone was there. I don't know how they do it. Then people say such things as, no reputable scientist believes in creation. Well, I can tell you some that do. People say that, but that's a silly comment, because I can tell you some people that do. No educated person believes in the Sabbath. Well, I know Peter's very educated. Right? Believes in the Sabbath. If you listen to the ABC on a Sunday night, we have that marvellous religious program. You ever heard it? You don't want to. It's biblical. And the commentator makes the comment that evolution is a fact, creation is a theory. Well, he's wrong. The other way around. And these are Christian people speaking about it. Now, recently I spoke to a biblical theologian who had a PhD in theology. Person I knew. Over something, and out of the blue he said to me, of course you know that the first 11 chapters of the Bible are just someone's story. They're not accurate. It's just a story. They don't mean anything. And in fact, theistic evolution is more accurate because we know that creation occurred over a very long period of time. It did not occur over 6 days or 7 days. And theistic evolution is a more accurate explanation of how life began. In other words, creation didn't occur over 7 days. It occurred over a long period of millions of years, and we evolved through several forms of life. One of the problems I have with evolution is that who created the first molecule? You know, where did it come from? Because I haven't got an answer to that. Not, I don't believe in that, but that's, you know, you've got to ask them that question. Where did it all come from? Just happen? Does it really matter what we believe in this area? It's been suggested that what we believe about origins is not a big deal. Actually, what we believe about creation greatly matters. Because what we believe in the beginning of life has far-reaching implications for other doctrines and practices. And this morning we're going to look at 7 reasons, and we're looking at biblical reasons. I'm not looking at scientific reasons. I'm looking at biblical reasons. I'm not going to go into science, because I can't do that. Because if I go into science, I'm giving you an opinion. I'm going to give you what the Bible says, and I'm going to show you what we believe about creation matters greatly. The first reason that what we believe about creation is that the Bible sets a very clear position on creation. And as the Seventh-day Adventist and as the Adventist Church, we accept the Bible as what? And what else? Authoritative. You're right in what you say. I only make sure that when I use the word truth, that if you talk to other people, they won't know what you're talking about. You know, we say we have the truth. What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything except to us who have it. Own language. But we accept the Bible as authoritative, as infallible, as the correct interpretation of events. Clear on that? I should ask that question again. Passages throughout the Bible are consistent with and supportive of the description in Genesis that God began life on earth by creating all original forms of life over 1 week. And if you go to Exodus chapter 10, 20, verse 11, the fourth commandment, it states, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested," what? "The seventh day." Then you go to Psalms 33, and I'd like you to turn to that, so I'll turn to it, because if I just read what, you'll never get to it by the time I finish. But if you go to Psalms 33, and if you look, if you read from verses 6 to 9, it says, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, their starry hosts by the breath of his mouth. He gathers the waters of the sea into the jars. He puts the deep into storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the people of the world revere him. For he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood fast." And whenever the Bible alludes to the creation story in Genesis, the scriptures depict creation as a reliable portrayal of the origin of life. So if you go to Isaiah chapter 45, you'll find that this is what it says. Isaiah 45 verse 12. Isaiah 45 verse 12. "It is I who made the earth and created mankind upon it. My own hand stretched out the heavens and marshaled the starry host." "Marshaled their starry host." If the scriptures are untrustworthy on this point, how about on every other belief? If the Bible is incorrect in what it's saying, what other teachers should be discarded or modified? In other words, the scriptures are no longer God's word. We accept what we want from them, and we reject what we want to, and your opinion is just as good as my opinion, and so we have no opinion. And that's what most of the world has nowadays, to have their own opinion. What did Jesus say about creation? Let's go to Matthew chapter 19. Because Jesus, as we accept him as God, we accept him as the divine authority, and so when Jesus says something, we should take note of it. Would you agree with that? So in chapter 19, verse 4 of Matthew, did I say Matthew? Sorry. Jesus speaking says, "Haven't you read," he replied, "that at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female." Here Jesus affirms the biblical position that the first human beings that were created, male and female, were created at the beginning and by a direct act of God. Is that right? In opposition to that, theistic evolution and progressive creation contend that animal life went on for long periods of time before humans became into existence. None of the views on evolution, whether they're theistic or not, hold the view that humans were directly created by God at the time life began. So we need to follow the same approach to scripture that Jesus used. Jesus needs to be our God when we understand the scripture and when we understand the creation story. Then we come to the third point, which is very relevant, because the Bible doctrine on creation is tied in with its teaching about salvation. The great story of redemption revolves around the creation story, because we're told in the beginning, how was man created? In the image of God, and he was created what? Without sin. No such thing as sin in this world when Adam and Eve were created. According to the Bible, God created the world perfect, and it was harmonious, it was free from sin, it was free from any taint of sin or death, And that because Adam and Eve sinned, they and their descendants became alienated from God, and as a result, death, which was the penalty for sin, came into being, and it spread over the entire created world. But when it happened, before it happened, God had created what? A plan, that if it happened, he had an answer for it. So that he gave the gift of his son so that everyone had the opportunity to be redeemed and to overcome death, which 1 Corinthians 15 calls the last what? Enemy. Last enemy to be destroyed. You go to Romans chapter 5 and read verse 12. It says this. Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and this way death came to all men because all have sinned. This, by clear implication, this tells us that before sin, there was what? No death. In other words, death wasn't part of God's original plan of creation. God never planned to have death. All other forms of a creation, whether it's theistic or progressive or whatever, maintain that death was an integral part and parcel of this world. Since the first simplest forms of life. In other words, death was part of God's creation. If we went down this track, it would destroy our understanding of salvation. But why do you need salvation when death was already part of salvation? Now, it's really interesting that the first book of the Bible is what? I'm doing a test here. What's the name of the first book of the Bible? I want the older ones to speak up. And what's the last book of the Bible? Revelation. That the book of generation starts with creation, and what does the book of Revelation end with? Creation. Did you know that? Yeah, creation though. Still creation. Recreation. In the first earth, when it was first created, Adam and Eve were put into the garden, and they were told not to eat of the tree of what? Knowledge of good and evil, but they were to eat the tree of what? Life. In the next earth, the new creation, it's interesting when you go to Revelation chapter 22, you find that in the new earth, there's what? A tree of life. And if you go to Revelation chapter 22, verse 1 and 2, it says, then the angel showed me the river of water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great city of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Now I hear people say, I wonder what the fruit's like. I hope it's mangoes. Let me tell you, whatever it is, it's better than what we got down here. Absolutely better. I have no idea what they are. But you know, it tells us that even when we have eternal life, we still have to obey God. And one of the ways we'll show we'll obey God is to what? Eat of the tree of life. And one of the reasons that Adam and Eve were driven from the Garden of Eden, because if they weren't, they would have lived what? Yeah, why? They would have eaten of the tree of life. And it's interesting, and I believe this, that when they left the Garden of Eden, they lived about 1,000 years. Not quite, close enough. Why? Because they still had the results of eating of the tree of life. And as time went through, life got less and less. But of course now I read that you're going to be lucky enough to live to be 150. How many people want to live to be 150? Let me tell you, once you reach your late 70s and 80s, you don't want to live to be 150. Why? Because all you do is walk around in what? Pain. You don't? Let me tell you, you do. I can't kneel anymore. I kneel, Peter's got a hand, hold me up. I just can't stand up on my own. I have to grab the thing and pull myself up. That's terrible. Never thought that would happen 40 years ago. I'm not looking forward to it too. talking to a friend who's my age, and I said to him, you know, when we were younger, college 40 odd years ago, we never thought we'd become as crooked as we are. He says, no, we didn't. Never thought that we'd ache and pain the way we do. Never thought when we started work that we'd look forward to the time when we didn't have to work as hard as we did. Never thought that we couldn't work as hard as we did 40 years ago. Someone says, do you still work as hard? I said, I work more effectively now. I can't do what I used to, but I can do it better. I can't work 16, 18 hours a day, 6 days a week. I can't do it. I can do it occasionally, but I can't do it. I slow down. It's also interesting that in the first creation of the world that God used to walk and talk with what? Adam and Eve. In the new earth, we're told that God's going to be with us again. Because if you go to Revelation chapter 22, verse 3, it says, no longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city and his servants will serve him. What does that tell you? It tells you that heaven moves from up there, wherever it is, down to this earth. Because heaven is where what? God is. Would you agree with that? No, I don't understand what heaven looks like. We all think we do, but that just to explain it to us. Far better than we can ever think, because I think Corinthians tells us, eye has not seen, or can the mind even imagine? That we all try to imagine, don't we? And some of us get very cranky when we disagree with a person and say, well, I don't know whether that's quite right. You know, that the streets of gold are pure gold, we don't know what that means. Well, you can see through it, but you can't see through gold, so that gold is so pure you can't see it. What it's saying is so magnificent, you can't even imagine it. We're going to live in a mansion? I hope they're better than what we call a mansion down here. Of course they will be. We don't know what it means. We just, in fact, if you read the John 14, and the correct version is that in my Father's house there are many rooms. No, there won't be. But that's what we think of. I was listening to a guy once who claimed that he'd worked out that the New Jerusalem would hold 3 billion people. I thought, well, we're going to be in a 6x4. It's just ridiculous to talk like that. There's no such thing as a number as the people who are going to go to heaven. Those that go to heaven will be those that have accepted. I have no idea how many people that will be. We know it will be the minority because the Bible tells us that. Because the people that will miss out in heaven are not the ones that had the opportunity, they're the ones that rejected it. No one who misses out will ever be able to say, I didn't have a chance. It'll be their own fault. And that's the way we act. We don't want to have anything to do with it. Which is interesting. In the beginning when God created the world, he said it was very good. Implied that it was without sin, suffering and death. So in the new earth, the same things will be absent. If you go to Revelation 21, I think it tells you that, there'll be no more, sorry. Verse 4, he'll wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. For the old order of things are what? Passed away. In the beginning, before the earth was created, before the sun and moon were there, where did the light come from? From God. Revelation 22 says the same thing in verse 6. The angel said to me, sorry, I've got the wrong one. Sorry, verse 5. There'll be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord will give them light. But we won't need the sun or the moon anymore. We won't get tired. Yes, we won't get tired. You won't be told to go to bed because it's 7 o'clock. You get tired all the time and you'll never get tired. Won't it be wonderful? And the food you eat will be far better than mummy's cooking. None of the alternative views on creation believe in the existence of a good and perfect world. If there'd never been a perfect world in the beginning, in which none of the effects of sin were present, how can we be sure that there's going to be a perfect world in the future? We can't. What we're told is what began in the beginning is going to end up in the end. Is it going to be better? No. You can't be better than perfect, can you? Did God create an imperfect world? No. You're going to recreate a more perfect? Well, no. The only thing is that there'll never be sin again, so I guess that's where the better perfect will be. Sin will never raise its head again. But it wasn't there in the beginning. Of course, if you believe in evolution, it affects God's character, because how can we know that love is the core of God's being? Many things can be emphasized. God demonstrated his loving character through creation. He created a perfect, beautiful world and placed Adam and Eve in a magnificent garden where they could thrive and prosper. Nothing that could be added to their happiness or fulfillment was lacking. The alternative view holds that God used the process of natural selection over long ages to get more advanced forms of life. These views actually raise serious concerns about God's character. How can you say he's loving and kind if he used death to create? If there was never a world where there was never any death or suffering, the question can be asked, what kind of God do we really serve? Why did he create us in misery? He didn't. Of course, then you have the implications of the worth of human beings. In Genesis chapter 1, it says, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female, he created them. That tells us that we're a direct creation of God, formed in what? His own image. All other forms of creation believe that we come as a result of a long change of development where we move from invertebrates to vertebrates, progressing from reptiles to birds to mammals. We teach that what we teach about the impact of the origin of humans has a profound impact on how we view and conduct ourselves. In classrooms in Australia and in the Western world, children are taught that we come from what? Apes. And that we're direct descendants of ape-like creatures. And when the bell rings and the class is dismissed, these same students go to a class that attempts to teach them good ethics. And it's interesting, in an article in the USA Today, there was an article entitled, if your kids go ape in school, you'll know why. Now, the connection is fairly obvious. If you're teaching them I come from apes, what are they going to behave like? Now, I must admit, I do meet some people that make me think that we do, but I know it's not true. That was a joke, in case you're wondering. The only belief that truly values human life is the one that God created it in his own image. It comes from the biblical story of creation. And I guess the last important thing about creation that's really important is the impact on the Sabbath. Because if creation didn't occur, what's the point of the Sabbath? It does matter what we believe about, creation because of the Sabbath. If our views on creation is shorn from its biblical roots. If there's no creation week, as stated in the Bible, when does God rest? Because it tells us in Genesis 2:2-3 that God rested on the seventh day from all his work that he'd done, and that he blessed the seventh day and made it holy. That becomes completely meaningless. It means nothing. It's all made up. In fact, some biblical, quote, skeptics, call themselves scholars, claim that some Jewish man wrote it in many thousand years later just to put it to do a Sabbath was right. There's no proof for that, and that's not right anyway. Because if that was so, you wouldn't have the mentions of it by Jesus and throughout the Bible. Mark chapter 2 verse 27 says that the Sabbath was made for man. God didn't make the Sabbath and say, well, what will we do now? We said, make man. He made the Sabbath, he said it was made for man. He knew man needed a rest. And you know, we keep the Sabbath, and every time we keep the Sabbath, what do we remember? God created it. You can't forget creation when you come here every Sabbath. Because you know, this is the day that God rested, he asked us to rest. That's why most other religions don't care whether they believe in the Sabbath or creation, because they've got nothing to remind them. As Christians, we only have one choice. And that's to choose the Lord of creation, described in the Bible, which promises that on earth, the earth will be restored to its original perfection and beauty. So it's your choice. But if you follow the Bible, you only have one choice. That's to believe that God did create the world in 7 days. Oh, by the way, I should mention to you, and I forgot, so we still can go, because I was asked to do this. No one knows I'm going to say this. I was down at the conference this week, and the ministerial guy said, why are you going to Hamilton? I wish I'd known that. He said, they are running recipe clubs every month for 4 years, and they want to know how do you transist from there to bring people in. I'm happy to give you a talk on it. I've got a talk on it after lunch if you want to. We've just finished a whole, and I've done it for 30 years, so I've had great success with it. It's hard work, but you can do it. We've just done it where I am for the first time.